I thought it was curious since I'm not that fond of vegetables, but I graciously accepted them anyways. Raoul and Maribel brought me plantains. Mrs. Matilda brought me yams. Nereida brought green peppers from her own garden. Oscar gave me a bag of pigeon peas that his wife had sent me. Helena felt bad that she hadn't brought anything. I told her not to worry, but she still was upset. She then asked to be excused, got on her bike and said that she'd be back. When Helena came back, she brought with her a bouquet of different flowers. I asked where she had got them and she said she went from house to house asking for flowers. She made very clear that hadn't stolen them and that I also believed. She had red and yellow roses as well as other flowers. While the others were conversing about their daily lives and routines, Helena and I were preparing a very beautiful flower arrangement. Helena said that though we couldn't eat them, they were food for the eyes. She couldn't have been more right, and people say she's crazy. I still had some lemons left, so we also made lemonade. No one had yet spoken about the reason why we had come together. We were now all in the garage when another car pulled up. Mr. Tonneau got out of the car with a bag in his hand. "Good evening, everyone," he said. I had told everyone about him and that we had to be gentle with him. He had brought yucca. I thanked him for it and asked Helena to introduce him to everyone while I went inside to set aside the things everyone brought. When I paused and looked at what everyone had brought, I felt a little uncomfortable. Did they think I had nothing to eat? It's not that I wasn't thankful, it's just that I thought it was strange. When I went back outside, Mr. Tonneau seemed a little more relaxed, though every now and then he would look at Helena, who was performing some sort of silent ballet in the backyard while she looked up at the sky. Maribel and Mrs. Matilda were seated in the hammock talking like old friends, and Raoul was listening to Oscar talk about his job as a police officer. Nereida tried to talk to Mr. Tonneau while she also observed Helena. I looked at everyone and felt like I was with family. I felt comfortable and like I'd known them forever. After a while, Helena stopped dancing and sat on the floor next to Nereida and Mr. Tonneau. He gestured me to come over, and when I did, he asked if I could show him the picture again. I went to look for it, and when I came back, everyone stopped talking. This was a little shocking for me. I gave it to him and he looked at it almost without blinking. We all stared at him. We all felt sorry for him. Out of everyone, he had had the least time to reflect on all that had happened. He even had just barely remembered. His mind was telling him it couldn't be, but his soul said otherwise. I knew also that Nereida couldn't yet quite understand, since she still hadn't been able to remember. We all got close to him and let him know that we were there for him. We told him it was okay to feel confused and disoriented, to not comprehend the situation entirely, and to feel anger and rage for the act that was committed against his will. Oscar was the first to come out and ask if he remembered what happened to him that night and if he felt comfortable to tell us. Mr. Tonneau sighed and started to talk. I was out late that night with a friend. My wife had died of cancer a few years ago. I don't remember the exact hour, but it was past 1 in the morning by the time I dropped off my friend off at her house in San Germán. I'd had a few drinks that night and did feel a little drunk. I feared losing control of the car, so I pulled up to this side of the road to wait a while. I was felt very drowsy, so I decided to lock the doors, close the windows and take a little nap. I turned off the engine and headlights and I reclined the seat. When I was about to fall asleep, I felt the car move. It was as if someone had gotten on top the rear side of the car. Then suddenly the movement and the noise stopped. I thought for a moment to go out and take a look, but the alcohol and drowsiness won over. When I was almost out of it, I felt someone trying to open the door. I tried to open my eyes, but I couldn't. Whoever it was, he was determined to open the door. After struggling a bit, I was able to slowly start to open my eyes. They felt like bags of cement. When I looked to my left, I saw what looked like a child. He had something in his hand that looked like a screwdriver, and he was using it to try and open my car. With the knuckles of my left hand, I was able to knock on the window a few times, but the little boy didn't respond. He kept doing his thing and ignored me. This made me mad, and I remember thinking that if I hadn't been that drunk, I'd gotten out of the car and give him a good kick in the, you know where. I then heard noise on my right side. Trying to get the right side door open was another boy. This one had some sort of wire hanger and was putting it through the top side of the window. I screamed and cursed at them, but they just kept ignoring me. I managed to get a better look at the one on my left and noticed something was not right with his head. None of them looked at me, and I now think it was better that way. I started to shake and fear came over me. I shouted, "Get out of here, you sons of bitches. Can't you see I want to sleep? Leave me alone." By then I was fully awake. Those children were not normal. When the one on the right managed to get the wire in and was trying to open the lock from the inside, I grabbed and screamed, "What do you think you're doing? Go to sleep, leave me alone." I twisted the wire so that he wouldn't be able to use it. I started the car, but the headlights wouldn't turn on. I didn't matter though, if I had to I would drive with no lights. I screamed at them again so that they'd clear out, but they didn't, so I just took off. I absolutely couldn't see anything in front of me, but I didn't care if I ran those two over. There weren't any lampposts on that road, there were only trees alongside it, and it was one of those trees that I crashed into. I hit my head on impact and could feel the blood running down my forehead and face. I couldn't move. I felt pain if I tried to. The last thing I remember before I lost consciousness was a cop crew. When I woke up, I was home and in my bed. I then told myself that I'd never drink again after that nightmare I had the night before. I noticed I had slept with my clothes on. I got up to go to the bathroom, and when I looked in the mirror, I noticed I had a wound on my forehead and my shirt was stained with blood. When I went outside, I saw that the front of my car was totally destroyed and the windshield had broken in a million pieces. I went inside the house again, locked myself in, and went back to sleep. I didn't want to think about anything. When I woke up again that afternoon, everything was still the same. I was convinced that I'd had an accident on my way back the night before for driving drunk, and that somehow I managed to get home. The thing about the big-headed children had to be a product of all the gin I drank. He took the car to the mechanic for reparation and had forgotten about the matter until Theodore Comito talked to Amorian, then his Oedon a picture. "Look, if you notice, you can see their blood stain on my shirt." We took a look at their picture again, and sure enough you could see their blood stain. Again we all went silent. This time it was Mr. Donoth that asked Ida a question. He asked Neri Ida where she had gotten that photo. She told him how it mysteriously appeared in her purse one day, but that she still couldn't remember the experience. If it hadn't been for that picture, she never would have thought that something like this might have happened to her. No matter how hard she tried, she came up with nothing. The only thing she remembers about that day was that she spent it taking care of her ill sister. Back in 1988, her sister lived in the town of Larges. Neri remembers leaving her sister's house at around 11 p.m., and she said that she got home without any sort of difficulty. She paused for a second and then added, "I actually do remember something that happened on the way back, but that I hadn't given it much thought. I remember I almost ran over a dog but managed to hit the brakes in time when my car's engine suddenly died. I was able to get it back running again and just got back underway." We all agreed that something else had definitively happened to Hart at night when she was coming back from her sister's house, and we had a pretty good idea what that was. The restaurant closed and we were all then left sort of isolated. We were talking about the possible ways Nereida might have been abducted when we hear some frightening noises. We heard the cows mooing and the horses neighing. Though we couldn't see the animals, we could tell they were nervous and agitated. All of a sudden one of my cats, the Satan Maribel's lap, just ran out of there. Christina started to growl and to run from side to side. We all froze and, like the animals, sensed something was not right. Nobody said a word nor moved. We all looked at each other and to the places where the noises might have been coming from. The breeze that we had been enjoying that night got stronger. At that moment I thought that maybe a storm was coming, and we started to get a light drizzle. Raoul then broke our silence by screaming, "Look." We all looked to where he was pointing but saw nothing. "Look at the trees." When we looked at the trees that were in front of the restaurant, these were barely moving. The trees around my little house, however, looked like they were near a hurricane. What was going on? Also, that train looked as if was only falling on us. The road in front of the restaurant was completely dry. Christina was still barking and Maribel and Raoul hugged each other and got close to me. All the animals were acting like crazy. My cats meowed uncontrollably. Mrs. Matilda, Oscar, Helena, Nereida, and Mr. Tono also joined Raoul, Maribel, and I. They all asked me what was going on, but I was just as scared as they were and really didn't know what to say. I thought the thing with the rain was so strange that I decided to go out the garage and look up. I didn't see anything, but I noticed the raindrops were salty. When they touched my eyes, they irritated them. Was it just rain or seawater? I looked up a second time, covering my face as much as possible from that water, and it was then that I saw it, a shadow, a dark circle. I recognized it immediately. It was a UFO. The panic I got was indescribable. It was stationed very high up and didn't make a sound. I screamed, they're back," and we all ran inside. Now I was really hysterical. Nobody had to ask whom I was talking about. We shut all the windows and closed all the doors. We turned off the lights and were left like mice hiding from a cat. Nereida was the first to start crying. We could hear Mrs. Matilda in a very soft voice trying to calm her down. Mr. Tono leaned on one of the kitchen walls and unintentionally caused one of the laminated paintings on it to fall on the ground. When it hit, we all screamed. We heard that rain fall in the zinc rooftop. The whirlwind was still active. Helena took my hand and I could feel her whole body trembling. Raoul and Maribel were still hugging, and then she started to cry while she kept saying she wanted to leave. Oscar also suggested we leave. We decided to leave the house at once. I suggested we go to Garbo Rojo, but that we should take the route through Bokeren. There lived more people around that area. If we took the other route, we would have to go through Villatena, which was a lot less populated. The gate outside was locked and we couldn't find the keys. I frenetically looked for them in the darkness, but still no luck. I knew Raoul and Maribel didn't need me to open the gate, since they could easily jump it as well as Helena. For the others, it would have been a little more difficult because of their age and weight. I finally found them and we started walking to the door. Nereida stopped crying and began praying out loud. Though I got why she did it, it got a little more on edge. Before I was about to open the door, we heard a buzzing sound. At first far away, but then it got closer. It was a sports car that was approaching at high speed. The sound was a familiar one and it helped grounded me a little, because everything that had happened since the animals went wild was absolutely unreal. The car went by very fast and I was again left in that impossible world. I asked everyone if they were ready, and they were. As I slowly opened the door, I could feel everyone's body heat on my back. The gate and the cars seemed to be a mile away. When I finally got the door opened, we all went out. The rain had stopped and there was now only a light breeze. Christina approached us and looked at us with curiosity. She went out to the gate and then stared up and growled. This meant that the UFO was still on top of us. I decided that when I got to fence, I wasn't going to look up. We all went down the step that separated the balcony from the garage at the same time, like one whole creature, like a human spider. I looked at everyone and it was as if thought they'd aged 10 years. I realized I had to be strong for them, though in all truth what I really wanted to do was run to Mama and hide in her arms. Nereida kept praying and we could still hear the animals were unsettled, but they weren't mooing or neighing. The horse's stomp could be felt on the ground like a vibration. The human spider then started to walk again. From the garage we all ran to the gate. I took the padlock in my hand but couldn't find the right key. While I was doing this, the others looked up. "My God!" exclaimed Mrs. Matilda as she made the sign of the cross. I hadn't noticed that Oscar had pulled out a small gun. I stopped what I was doing and asked him to put it away. He looked at me surprised and replied that we might need it. "We don't need it, put it away," I said. The others were trying to rush me as they said that it looked like the object was starting to descend. I didn't want to look. "Hurry, Amori, hurry," they yelled. Helena was grabbing me so strongly from the back by my shirt that I thought any moment she was going to rip it off. With my hands sweating and shaking, I still couldn't find the right key. Oscar put away the gun and I was able to find the key. I opened the padlock, but as soon as I did, I was blinded. I couldn't see and I started to scream and heard everyone yelling, "I can't see, I can't see." Neri Ida was screaming to God to please help us. I thought we'd best go back inside the house. We couldn't drive our cars while blind and hysterical. I felt Helena fall and as she did, she took me with her. She was unconscious. I shook her but she wouldn't wake up. Christina was still barking and with everyone yelling and crying, I thought I would pout too, or at least that's what I wished would happen. In a matter of seconds my vision started adjusting till I started to see shadows, but it was enough. I could see the house and the entrance of the door we had just got out from. I tried to pick Helena up but she was too heavy for me. Thought she looked skinny, she was heavy. Slowly I could see even better. "Let's go back inside," I yelled. Inexplicably there came a dead silence amongst us as the wind died down and the trees stopped their erratic movements. Everyone except for Helena placed their hand on my shoulders, head, and arms and I guided them inside. I then went out for Helena and when I got to her she could move. I couldn't tell if her eyes were open or not, but when I called her name she replied. They came back, I helped her up and took her inside. Everything was dark and silent inside the house. I immediately thought the worst. I took Helena to the sofa and laid her down. When I went to close the door, everything outside looked as if nothing had happened. You couldn't hear the wind anymore, the animals, and Christina and my cats had calmed down. I asked myself if the UFO was still up there. Though I didn't go out to find out, I supposed it was there, suspended like a dark shadow. It was like looking up at a sky full of stars with a black hole. "And what about that strange rain?" I thought. I had stroked my face and put the wet fingers in my mouth. They tasted salty. It was all very strange. I asked how everyone was and they responded they were okay. I got out a flashlight from my room. Though I could see fairly well now, when I blinked I saw a white light in front of me. I took the light to everyone to see their faces and felt sad for them. I wanted to hug them all and comfort them, but I think I needed that even more than they did. I know this may come off as a little pretentious, but I want to be honest in terms of what I felt that night. I sensed they saw in me a leader, but I didn't want to be. I didn't feel qualified. I only wanted to go to Mama's house and hide like a frightened child. I would have preferred Oscar to be the one that led us. I thought he was better suited since he was a police officer, yet he also was expecting from me something I couldn't bring them, courage. Maybe because we were in my home all the responsibility came to rest on my shoulders. I asked how they felt and if they could see now a little more than just shadows. Raoul answered upset that how could they see if they were in total darkness. I told him he knew what I was referring to. Maribel called him out in his attitude towards me and then apologized. Mrs. Matilda and Neri Ida went to the living room to watch over Helena. Mr. Tono stayed in the kitchen with Raoul and Maribel. "What are we going to do?" Dash asked Oscar. "I have no idea," I answered. "What was that light that blinded us?" asked Mr. Tono. "It came from the UFO," answered Raoul. "Apparently while I was trying to open the gate and the others were looking up, the object produced a brilliant light like lightning directed at us. We inferred that it was so that we'd stay in the house. While we discussed the possible reasons as to why they would want us to stay, something as incredible as everything else happened. Every crack in the wood of the house and every hole in the roof was suddenly brightly illuminated. It was as if it were day outside and we'd close all the doors and windows, but the light still penetrated inside." My dog again started to bark enraged. The light then turned off as suddenly as it appeared and were left again stunned and a little blinded. That lasted for less than a minute. The light of my flashlight looked like a firefly. Mrs. Matilda asked me what exactly did they want with us. Neri Ida asked me why did they torment us. I knew none of the answers and I yelled why were they asking me, which was very rude of me and I immediately apologized. I told them I didn't know but that the most logical thing was that maybe they were trying to communicate with us again. "But why all the drama?" Dash asked Maribel. "Well, If we think about it, we're the ones making the drama, I answered. Again that brilliant light appeared, but this time only formed the backyard. Christina kept it barking and running. I told everyone that we should try to relax and take things slow. We are all aware of what's happening, so let's just try and put the fear aside, I remarked while my own knees trembled and my tongue was heavy. No matter what happens, we're all together. Well, who's going to go outside and confront them? I said, having no idea how those words had come out of my mouth. Almost at the same time everyone said, not me. Why don't you go, Amory? Dash asked Mr. Tono. Because I can't bear to see those big-headed little ones again. Frankly, I'm terrified of them. But what are we going to do? Stay in here locked up till morning? Dash asked Helena. I then suggested we all go to the bedroom and open up one of the windows that face the backyard to see if we could observe anything. We all went to the bedroom and Raoul slowly started to open the window. We could clearly see a column of light coming from the sky. It was white and like a piece of day in the night. Because of the window's position, we couldn't see exactly where the column of light was coming from. We guessed it came from the flying saucer. We all admired it all the while Christina ran around it and barked. She never penetrated it though. We were all commenting and asking each other's things like, this has got to be visible from a distance, why hasn't anyone come around? What does this light mean? What's it for? Is Amarin coming down? Mrs. Matilda suggested I shout his name to see what happened. I told her she should do it because I was too afraid, but she was afraid to do it also. Who's going to do it then? Amarin. Dash shouted Helena through the window. At that moment I think we all stopped breathing. I then went ahead and called his name too. All of a sudden we were all calling him in a sort of collective hysteria. Look, look at the light, it's changing. The light was still white but the tone had changed. We noticed that from highest point we could see the column of light, something started to descend. It slowly came into our view. They were shoes. Here they come, shouted Maribel. We left the window open and immediately ran out of the room screaming. Nereida started praying again. Christina suddenly stopped barking. In very low voice I told everyone to please calm down and to try and listen. Someone knocked on the back door three times. Again we were struck by paralysis. Again they knocked. Mr. Tono whispered in my ear to ask who it was. Who is it? Who's there? Dash, I asked. It's me, Amarin. My heart almost stopped and I couldn't breathe right. I felt I was out of breath and I swear I would have rather died than confront that situation. I wish to speak with you, Amory. I couldn't believe it. He called me by my name. This had to be a joke. I had to grab onto Mr. Tono's arm because I thought I would faint and my legs felt like chewing gum. Every time he uttered a word on the other side of the door, it was a hammer pounding on my mental equilibrium. I felt, like the others, that we knew absolutely nothing about the world and its affairs. Each word pronounced by this being from another world carried a certain weight, and that weight little by little and word for word destroyed everything I considered real. Nothing is as we think it is. The unknown is always around the corner waiting for us. If you want to talk to me, do it from out there, I said. I felt I was talking to a ghost, but he was indeed real. As real as you who are reading this. We could no longer see the light coming in from the bedroom. We were all hugging each other and we left the living room to go into the kitchen so that we could hear him better. The next thing he said was something like, I know very well how you're feeling right now. I too am afraid. At least you have each other. Yet I've come alone up to your doorstep. I carry no weapons, so there's no reason to fear me. I have not come here to hurt you. If my intentions were to hurt you, I wouldn't have had to come here personally. Oscar told me to ask him what he wanted with us. I told him to ask that himself, but he insisted I do it. You want to talk to us? Dash, I asked. Well, I'd say we already are, don't you think? Before he could speak again I kept going. Now you look here, Amarin or whatever your name is, why have you come here? To do the same thing you did the last time? Do you think that after doing something like that, taking us against our will to that place, we now have to welcome you with open arms? I was scared, but something stronger grabbed a hold of me. The rage and anger I had felt for all the emotional and psychological damage that this person had caused me surfaced, and the fear subsided. What gives you and your creature companions the right to take people from our Earth like that? Dash, I added. Raoul told me to be careful with what I was saying and to try and calm down. I didn't even bother to reply to that. I separated from the others and I went right up to the door. Can you hear me better now?
Yes, I hear you, Amori.
Are those big-headed creatures with you? Are they outside with you waiting for me to open the door? Amori, this is your home and I'm not going to make you do anything against your will. I looked back at everyone laughing like a madman and pointing the flashlight in everyone's faces. Did you hear that? Dash, I said very sarcastically. He's not going to make me do anything against my will. And I'm supposed to believe the same individual that kidnapped my friends and I. Besides, you haven't answered my question, are the little ones with you?
They're not with me this time. I'm alone.
Where are they then?
There's only one of the ones you're referring to, and he's in my transportation vehicle.
Did you hear that? His transportation vehicle, as if it was some toy. It must have been my nerves, because I was being very sarcastic and arrogant. Even I didn't recognize myself at this point.
Well, the best thing you can do is to leave him there in your vehicle, because I don't want to see him. In all truth, I really didn't want to see these creatures again, because I knew that if I saw one I would have, excuse my language, shit in my pants. I felt every muscle in my body was tense, and an intense anger for the way this man behind the door was addressing me. His tone was friendly and wasn't angry at all.
Amori, why don't you open the door so that we can talk face to face? How can I be sure of your intentions? How can I accept the word of a kidnapper? Because that what you are, a kidnapper. It doesn't matter where you come from, it's all the same. The fact that you're not from this planet doesn't change things. Even if you came from Russia, France, or Africa, it still wouldn't change anything. Do you know where Russia and Japan are?
Yes, Amori, I know where they're located. I know you don't trust me or my people, and I don't blame you.
I agree with you in that the procedure we used to make contact with you was not appropriate, and that's one of the things I wish to speak to you about. He sounded so honest and sincere that I almost believed him. I told him to wait a moment and went to talk to the others. What do you think? Should I open the door?
Dash, they all looked at me like their eyes were coming out of their sockets.
Well, tell me, say something.
Helena, what do you have to say?
He is good.
Raoul and Maribel nodded in approval.
Oscar, how about you?
I don't know, buddy, but the fact is that if he really wanted to harm us, he would have done it already. I then asked Mrs. Matilda and Mr. Tono, who were the oldest in the group. They said to do what I thought best. Nereidia just said to let it be God's will. The next thing I did went against my own values and morals, since I abhor weapons.
Oscar, hand me your gun.
Oscar handed me his gun and I went back to the door.
Amarin, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Very well, now you listen carefully.
Do you know what a revolver is?
Yes.
Then look, I have one. The first thing I'm going to do is to turn on the light bulb that's right next to the door.
Do you know what a light bulb is?
The artificial light contained in a glass sphere. The second thing I'm going to do is open the door and, I swear on my grandmother, if one of your little friends tries to get in, the first bullet is going to be for him and the second one for you.
Do you know what a bullet is?
Yes, the projectile discharged by the weapon. Though I knew in my heart that I would have never been able to shoot the little ones or this man, I opened the door and there he was, the same as in the picture. The same as the day we all met in the projection room, as we have come to call it. All the anger and rage inside me was replaced by something else. I lowered the gun. He was alone and I could see fear and terror in his eyes. His eyes reflected how human he was. I threw the gun on the ground. We just stood there and looked at each other without saying a word. What a strange sensation. Though in my opinion this person had done wrong, I couldn't hate him or mistreat him. For the first time I was able to get a good look at him. There, standing in the back door light, he was real and the same as us.
I regretted the way I had treated him, and I knew he also regretted the way he had handled matters years back. His actions had been entrusted to him. It wasn't in his hands. Little by little, everyone got close to me and also observed him.